So essentially, your Rushmore is Darren Randolph, Katie Taylor, Laura Whitmore, and me.
OTB AM's Mount Rushmore, live every weekday at 7:30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Okay, we are turning our attention to the big fight of the weekend. It is Katie Taylor against Delphine Persoon, the second fight, the rematch. And I'm delighted to say that Brian Campbell from CBS Sports, Showtime Boxing and Morning Combat is on the line. Brian, how are you doing? You're very welcome to the show.
Oh, fired up. Thanks for having me. You know, from my side of the pond to yours, I'm ready for fisticuffs this weekend. Believe that.
Absolutely. It doesn't do any harm to the hype for this fight that the first fight went the way that it did, that we have a bit of narrative, we have a bit of controversy. You were there in the garden that night. What was your takeaway that night, and how important is that going into this Saturday?
Look, this fight was a surprise to a lot of us on the American side. We know all about Katie Taylor, all about the amateur pedigree, the spot that she's carved out for herself as a national hero and really, you know, the potential face of women's boxing. And to see the fight unfold the way it did, in which you had a fearless fighter in Delphine Persoon go out there and not just really be responsible, I thought, for making that the frenetic, crazy fight of the year contender that it was, but really most importantly, going in there against one of the most skilled female boxers on this planet and making her fight the kind of fight that she probably didn't want to coming in. That was alarming to see. Obviously, we give Katie Taylor a ton of credit for the way that, you know, she was the matador to that crazy bull in Delphine Persoon. But at the end of the day, I was not alone at ringside at Madison Square Garden scoring that in favor of Persoon. And what the two of them created was just a hellacious back and forth fight in which I thought both really had to dig deep to the back room of their personal intangibles to find out where their heart was, to find out how bad they wanted it. On such a big card, let's not forget, this was AJ's showcase to America, Anthony Joshua, becoming the big global star. And of course, we know how that ended with the crazy upset. But on an already crazy night, I had to give Delphine Persoon so much credit for going in there and making this the war that it was.
In a weird way, Katie Taylor's weaknesses that night and the way she almost lost that fight, in your view, the way she did lose that fight, probably enhances her profile. It certainly gives us something extra to talk about. There was a lot of criticism about Taylor at the start about, you know, well, who has she fought? Who in this game is actually good enough to give her a run for her money? It was proven in Madison Square Garden that night that there is a contender good enough to give her a run for her money. And I'm sure stateside, that really increases the interest around Taylor too.
You did, and we wanted to see that rematch right away, the next night, the next week, the next month, whatever they were willing to do. It certainly makes me happy knowing that this Saturday's card in Eddie Hearn's backyard, the big fight camp, that they have added this onto an already great card with White and Povetkin, because we needed to see this. We need to see if Katie Taylor truly is of that ilk. Was this one rough night at the office? Two of the three judges gave her the nod. I'm not taking that away from her at all. That was a hellacious fight. But from what I saw, from a lot of people saw with our own eyes, she was forced to fight a style and a pace that just wasn't healthy. I mean, look, who else are you going to find on the planet to be able to instill that type of attack of Delphine Persoon, who has the background as a police officer by day and just a fearless boxer by night, who comes in there, walks right into oncoming traffic, squares up, and basically says, if you're going to beat me, you're going to have to kill me. You're going to have to beat me on my terms, which is I want you to pour out the entire jug. Now, once again, to Taylor's credit, she was able to make that close. She was able to survive. I thought she got rocked in that final round. I thought she was hanging on for dear life. She was certainly the more skilled fighter. She was able to stand in, dig her heels in, and have those pockets of combinations and show us what all the hullabaloo was about in terms of her skill set. She also had the heart to back it up. But now she's got to come out here a second time. And I think the most intriguing part of this rematch is we certainly want to see Persoon get that second chance of a fight a lot of us thought she won. But we want to see what type of adjustments the great Katie Taylor can make, because this is not a normal style and aggressive package you're going up there against. Katie Taylor can typically outskill most of her opponents. This fight may not come down to skill. She may have to step in there earlier and prove that she's the bigger puncher, she has the bigger heart, that she's just the bigger everything against an opponent who seemingly has nothing to lose here and has got a second chance at making her name.
That is the really interesting thread going into this fight. How can Katie Taylor adjust in terms of her game plan? And maybe in terms of the way she approaches this fight as well. We had Kenneth Egan on the show last week, and he was making the point that Katie Taylor still gets a lot of punches away, but she's never likely to knock you out. She still, I guess, boxes like an Olympic boxer to a point. Do you go along with that? Do you think that she has the knockout potential? And does she need to find that, basically, to prolong her already stunning start to her professional career?
Yeah, look, this is probably the right opponent at the right time if Katie Taylor as a pro is going to fulfill her bright potential, which really is to become possibly, you know, the female pound-for-pound queen on the planet and the best boxer today. This is a different kind of opponent that pulled different things out of her. I would have liked to see her power having more effect on Persoon. What we don't know is Persoon just this anomaly who can take punishment and keep coming. Is there no one else like her on the planet? Or was that a wake-up call for Katie Taylor to sit down more on her punches, to get off earlier and make more of a statement, try to discipline her opponent? I'm not saying it's easy to discipline Delphine Persoon. She comes out like a rabid animal out there. That's her style. It works. But the success Katie Taylor did have at certain points in the mid and early in the second half of that fight was sitting down and fighting. She did it under the guise of the strong technique and combinations that she has. But she had a fight, and I wonder this second time around if she can prove to us, if she commits more to the power shots, because you're going to have to give Persoon a reason not to do what she does. You're going to have to make her pay that toll earlier to have her to try to make an adjustment. If Taylor can do that, we'll see that she would have grown from that first fight. I thought maybe she got caught off guard this second time around, now that she has this much time to prepare, and we believe in her talent this much. Can she make this an easier night at the office?
In your opinion, Brian, where is Katie's ceiling at the moment? Do we still see development in the next little while, in your opinion? Is there still room to improve and room to grow, I guess, as a potentially global superstar?
Absolutely there is. And look, it's hard in the women's boxing game. It's a much shallower pool of opponents. So sometimes we can hype up a big fight. And remember on stateside when it was Clarissa Shields against Christina Hammer, all four middleweight titles. It was like, this is finally going to be the test for Shields. And it was just an absolutely one-sided fight. You never know what you're going to get each step of the way. But you need, again, these type of fights that challenge you in ways you didn't see happening. Obviously, Katie Taylor has to answer those questions in this rematch, but of course I see her ceiling still as bright as before. I don't think people can match her amateur background and her skill set mixed with her hunger. Persoon, she's got next level hunger, all right? She may eat your soul if she gets close enough to you, but I don't think she can match Taylor from a technical standpoint. So if we can make this a little bit more of a technical fight by using a little bit more savagery early on, like I mentioned, I still think Katie Taylor should be the favorite coming in, despite everything we saw in that first fight. And I do see, if she can get past this test, as really the right maybe wake-up call overall to show her that she needs to expand a little bit more. And I still see her on pace to where, you know, all the fans, the promoters have crawled out for her. I mean, she could be very much the face of women's boxing if she isn't already in certain pockets of the globe when it's all said and done.
For sure. And it's interesting whether or not it'll be limited to boxing in the future, because Eddie Hearn was on the show last week. And when he spoke about the ceiling for Katie Taylor, he didn't stop at boxing. He said there is a potential crossover here for Katie Taylor to take on the likes of Holly Holm and Chris Cyborg. Like, is that something that you see as a realistic possibility down the line? I mean, only she can answer that herself, whether or not she would be interested in a crossover sort of a appeal like that. But I'd just be keen to get your take on that possibility.
Yeah. Look, obviously women's boxers in the U.S. have had to go overseas for years to get paid or get any type of competition. It's the opposite of mixed martial arts. It obviously would come down to the commitment level for Katie to learn some of these new important foundational skills, right? Like takedown defense, grappling, that kind of stuff. And what she already sort of has in the tank in terms of in her early life and sort of some of those natural foundations as well. Star power, it depends how quickly she cleans out her available big name opponents in boxing. And I think that's the same reason why stateside Clarissa Shields, who's sort of running out of opponents, is saying, hey, maybe I should commit myself for a year and a half and then go in there and chase some of those same big names. It would be interesting. It's an uphill battle, but it was an uphill battle for Holly Holm when she made that switch as well as a 17-time boxing champion going there. Now, look, she had the kickboxing background that she could at least lean on one foundational aspect. She was also a quick learner. I think for any big-name female boxer to want to do that, you do have to make the full-time commitment. I don't think you can be, hey, I'm going to box twice a year and then try out this MMA thing at the side. It would have to come to a certain point in her career where she says, I've done all I've done on the boxing side. Let me put all my eggs in that MMA basket. If she did what Holly Holm did in that commitment level, look, Katie Taylor's got she's the fighting pride of Ireland for a reason. She could fight. There's a backbone in there. I wouldn't count her out. Maybe it's more to her liking if they can do some kind of crossover boxing match with some of these large names who have boxing backgrounds. That would be very interesting. If you can meet in the middle on weight, it comes down to the cash. Can we find enough cash to make this happen? We're trying to get Clarissa Shields against Leila Ali if we can find enough of the cash for people to get interested in.
That is the interesting thing. So let's perhaps entertain that possibility, because I guess given Taylor's age at this point, a full crossover into MMA perhaps is unlikely. You can never count her out of doing anything. But at the same time, Cyborg, you know, she's had a boxing license for quite some time now. You mentioned Holmes, boxing credentials. It is easier to move into the boxing realm. In a fantasy world where one of these fights happen, where Taylor fights one of those two fighters in a boxing ring, and no crossover at all, it's a boxing fight. Does that then have the ability to suddenly grab the kind of unbridled attention of everybody in the United States? Like, just because Dana White isn't, you know, flaunting his stuff and promoting the fight, do they have enough interest as characters in their own right for a boxing event to really grab the attention?
Yeah, to a certain level, yes. It's hard in the States with team sports, you know, with the NBA, with college football, with NFL being just so outrageously far ahead from the level of casual notice and care. But I think that there's certainly, look, those people like Holly Holm, Chris Cyborg, they are big stars in the American side in the subculture of mixed martial arts. I don't think Holly Holm will ever stop being able to live up the head kick that finished Ronda Rousey. She may be able to get that. She may be able to get two or three more title shots for all we know in the end of her MMA career just on that one moment alone, although obviously she's a great athlete and star. Those could be great opportunities for Kaylee Taylor to really make her name if they were willing at the end of their MMA run, meaning Cyborg, Holm, that type of caliber of a brand name to come back to boxing or make the move over in Cyborg's case. Yes, absolutely. For the American fans that aren't closer to the hardcore side that maybe don't know her, they would know Katie Taylor now, and I think certainly you'd have to like her chances against both of those.
It's remarkable how the likes of Holm and Cyborg are such household names. There aren't, like, being blunt here, there aren't too many sports around the world where the female competitors are as high profile as the men, but it's a fact in mixed martial arts that has been the case. They're as famous, if not more famous, in many cases. Why is that, and do you think boxing can learn from that?
In some ways, it's a perfect storm of a few different things. It took Ronda Rousey, because you need one. You need a Tiger Woods. It took Ronda Rousey to be that one Mike Tyson-like finisher with the personality. She's good-looking. She can cross over into things to be the face of what you're doing. It took Ronda Rousey to get Dana White and UFC to say, hey, look, other organizations are having luck with this female thing. Let's give it a try. Why does it not work on the other sports like boxing or even women's basketball, to be honest? There's something about when you get elite-level women's fighters on the MMA side in the same cage, you get magic. And there was – I use the term perfect storm because you need a face like Rousey. You also need a group of somewhat equally competitive women. And in this case, it was 135 pounds to start. And now in women's MMA, it's the 115-pound strawweight division that's carrying the flag with Joanna Jung Jacek, Rose Namajunas, Weili Zhang, et cetera, that can put on fights that are equal to, and in a lot of cases better, than the male side. I think too often people watch women's basketball at the highest level, or even women's boxing when it's hard to find two very super elite people to get in there, and they can see either a one-sided thing playing out, or they can see maybe the skill level isn't at the same level as what we see on the men. And it's a staggering difference. I think in women's MMA, the females were able to close that gap quickly. Their fights are just as aggressive, if not more, and crazy and dramatic and crazy streams of momentum. I mean, I remember that Holly Holm title fight against Misha Tate after she knocked out Ronda Rousey, where that went five rounds back and forth. I've never seen a crowd explode like that for a female event. And it's fights like that that people go, is no longer, oh, this is male, this is female, yeah. This is mixed martial arts. Boxing has always had the problem of being largely disorganized. They will get behind one star when they have one, Leila Ali, Christy Martin, etc. But it's much harder, seemingly, to find a larger pool of opponents with that same ability level. Women's MMA came at the right time, and they had soldiers ready for this war. And obviously, you need a couple Rousey Holm types that can market above and beyond. It's perfect. And you know, as a MMA journalist as well, full time, I get just excited for these female title fights as I do the male.
Yeah, as you said, there is kind of nobody distinguishes between them anymore. It's just fighting at the end of the day. And I guess what it comes down to is pure entertainment. And the fact that Taylor and Prasoon put on such an entertaining fight last year, like, I mean, that cannot do any harm for the sport itself. It's just we need a constant stream of this, and the disorganization is a really good point. Just to kind of wrap up on Katie Taylor before I get your take on the heavyweights, are you confident that she now has the ability to be able to stylistically make the small differences to allow her to dominate on Saturday night?
Yes, because a couple key points here when you look back at that first fight. She bent. She never broke, though, right? She never completely was overwhelmed. Again, I thought Prasoon edged out a very close fight. One judge had it even. Two judges had it, what, 96-94? So we're talking about a fight that's basically even. And I thought for the harassment and even the punishment that Katie Taylor took at times, she was the better skilled fighter in this fight. And maybe that's what the judges preferred at the end of the day. So if you give her more time, where she's not going to be taken aback by this. Obviously, you can watch a video of somebody, but you never know what it's going to be like until they ring that bell and you're in there. You have to believe, and this is somewhat true historically, when you have a great first fight and you go into a big name, you know, a big name rematch, the more skilled fighter, more often than not, is able to control the pace better, the terms, the distance, all of those things. Obviously, this will be a lot for Katie Taylor to shoulder. This is the defining fight up to this point of her pro career in many ways. But I believe in that skill mixed with that backbone. And I say that a lot, but it's true. You know, you got to be willing to go through it. And Katie Taylor showed us in that first fight, she'll be there at the end of the day. She may be wobbling in round 10, but she'll be there at the end of the day. And if you give me somebody with that hunger, with that level of pride in her craft, in her nation, and really that skill set, skills pay the bills at the end of the day. Just as much as we need Katie Taylor to answer certain questions, does Delphine Persoon have the same fuel in the tank to do this one more time? You can't, you know, you fool me once, surprise me once. Can you do it twice? There's a lot of intrigue in here. I'm always going to lean, though, with the person that has that much of an advantage when it comes to skill.
And how is she going to win? So you've called it there that Katie is going to win. How do you see it happening?
I see it being close and competitive, of course, but I just see her having her way more in some of the exchanges. She's going to have to be able to control distance. Maybe it's going to come through the stiff jab, but she's going to have to make Persoon pay for basically just squaring up and coming at her straight on. You know, the reason you don't see that done often in boxing, certainly not at the highest level, you open yourself up to punishment. Maybe it's going through the body early, but as long as Katie can deliver those combinations and then get out of trouble, not be pinned against the ropes, not be sucked into a phone booth brawl more often than not, I think she can get a strong decision here. And we come out of there going, hey, close call the first time. This was a tough out in the great history of Katie Taylor's rise, but she did the deed the second time and left us with no questions.
I just want to get your quick take then on White against Povetkin. It's a cracking fight to round off the night on Saturday night. Dillian White, his only loss in his professional career so far, has been to Anthony Joshua. He is always considered to be outside the top tier if you're considering the big three. He is, it seems to me, the best placed to cause somebody trouble in that top three. Of course, Povetkin is a huge fight for him this weekend, and it is not a foregone conclusion. But I reckon any of the top three of Wilder, Fury, and Joshua would all be looking over their shoulder cautiously at Dillian White.
Absolutely. Look, I don't think my American brethren are woke enough to what Dillian White has done since that loss to AJ, in which, oh, by the way, he hurt him. I mean, he wobbled him. There was some moments in there where White almost pulled that off. He's won something like 11 straight, you know, twice against Chisora, against Joseph Parker. I mean, he's beaten the guys he was supposed to, but he's looked almost improved each step of the way. Each one of those wins, you're like, yes, exactly what you said. I think if he wins this against Povetkin, he proves that he's of that ilk, of that upper shelf of the Joshua Wilder Fury. Obviously, Wilder will need to redeem himself against Fury. And, you know, maybe we throw Alexander Usyk until we see more proof that he's in that group as well. But this gives him the opportunity. And what I love about this fight, and it's certainly on paper one of the best of the year, is that this is Povetkin's last chance. And he's been, you know, close to that very top circle. He had won a secondary title in the past. He'd given Klitschko hell until he got stopped. He goes out there to let it all out. I mean, we saw him against David Price even a couple of fights ago. I didn't think he should have got hit that many times, but he went in there and was ready to go to war. This is his last chance to be in a big fight that matters like this. And certainly when you look at the stakes, the winner's the mandatory for Tyson Fury. The winner is forcing their way, the old school way, right? Keep winning, keep knocking on that door, and eventually they're going to open it. I certainly like White's chances, but I believe that Povetkin's going to make it as dirty, gross, powerful, and grimy as he needs to try to go in there and roll the dice a little bit, and that should be fun to watch.
I had to double check there to make sure that Wilder Fury 2 was indeed this year, because it just feels like 20 years ago at this point after everything that's happened this calendar year. Just one final question on that. Like, you've mentioned how disorganized boxing can be, and it certainly felt at times last year that boxing's disorganization would lead to the, I guess, the underutilization of a fantastic heavyweight division. Like 2018 was Fury Wilder 1, brilliant fight to close out the year. And then last year felt a little bit disappointing, I'm not going to lie. So if you were in charge of boxing, which nobody is, but if you had all these heavyweights in your stable, how would you pawn them off against one another over the next few months and years?
Yeah, I'd force them to face each other and tell them to stop signing exclusive deals with American TV networks or British ones, be that, that keeps them apart from each other. I think, you know, you want to see at the end who's the best. I feel like it would come down to Fury and Joshua. So can we put them on separate sides of the bracket? Because look, we've seen vulnerability in AJ, and a lot of American fans are like, oh, you know, he never was. Look at him. He always was toeing the line. That's what made AJ's fight so fun, is he'd get hurt and come back. It was like a movie in some ways. I still think those two end up at the end of the bracket. I think Usyk's a monster wild card, but still has to prove to us, when the punching is that real on the other side, can he still be that wizard and outclass you and get inside and wear you down? We'll have to find that out. But I'd love, give me a 4-man tournament, give me a 6-man, give me an 8-man tournament. If we had real control over this and we could really make it happen, I'd love that you set out the next year and a half. This is what we do. And at the end of the day, the winner is going to have all four belts. The good news, though, is we're actually almost there. I know both AJ and Fury have many mandatories to get through. But if Fury gets by Wilder for the third time, which he probably will, and then, you know, AJ chips off a mandatory here or there, we may only be a year away from seeing that type of fight anyway. And I know on your side of the globe, that's ready to pack, you know, 100,000-seat soccer stadiums and tell Carl Froch and his 80K to go kick stones. But on our side of the tracks, it is just as monstrous, too. I mean, can we put that, I don't care, Central Park? Can we put it on a boat somewhere? Can we put it on the moon? Let's make that. I mean, when was the last time we had a heavyweight fight that would matter this much? All four titles, the lineal crown, the guy, the man, one face, one title, one division. Please, get me fired up. I feel like I'm watching Bo Holyfield 1 all over again. I love it.
Couldn't agree with you more. Hopefully this pandemic just shows everybody that time is precious and money is precious as well, and that we'll actually be able to get on with it, basically. No more tiptoeing around each other and, as you say, signing these deals that actually just hold up the whole process. Brian, you've got me excited for the weekend. I'm not going to lie. You have been listening to Brian Campbell from CBS Sports, Showtime Boxing and Morning Combat. Brian, thanks a million for taking the call.
Thank you.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.